For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website. Good evening, Bodhisattvas. So, my talk tonight is on the Dharma of shoveling snow, kind of in the vein of, you know, chopping wood and carrying water, and, you know, now we have shoveling snow. And I thought of this talk actually a couple weeks ago, and it seemed very pertinent at the time, and then all the snow melted, so I was a little worried about, you know, how is this going to work. But thankfully, you know, February came through for us, and we got a little more snow, and I got to shovel it last night when I got home from our sesshin, and so it reminded me of the Dharma of shoveling snow. But I want to start with a little story, and maybe over the course of my story it will be clear what I am hoping to illustrate with my talk tonight, what Dharma principles I'm hoping to illustrate. So we moved into a house right around Thanksgiving where, for the first time in my entire adult life, I am obliged to shovel snow. And wasn't really sure how I was going to feel about this. And maybe this is, you know, the lifetime of a shoveler, is that you'll feel all different kinds of things. But I was pretty psyched about it when we got our first snow. It was pretty clear. We actually came back from Thanksgiving and found that there was snow, and it was just impossible to shovel because it had already been tramped down. So I was very psyched when, right after, I don't know, sometime in January, a few weeks ago, we got a snowfall, and I was able to get up the next morning and shovel, and it seemed like we got a bunch of snowfalls right after each other. So we got one that was maybe 3 inches, and I went out and I shoveled, and it's, you know, it's morning, and it's nice, and it's, you know, it's always nicer when the snow's done, because it's warmed up a little bit and the sun is shining and I'm out there shoveling the snow, and I see a guy down the street and he's shoveling snow, and I don't know any of these people because it was too cold when we moved in, so I haven't really had a chance to meet any of our neighbors. Except that I'm meeting them through shoveling snow. So I see this guy, and he's, you know, he's like four houses down, and I'm shoveling my sidewalk, and he's pretty much done shoveling his sidewalk, and he comes up kind of just pushing the shovel along the walk, and he starts pitching in with shoveling my sidewalk. And I said, "Oh, thanks, that's so nice of you." And he said, "Well, you know, if somebody's going to shovel, I'm happy to help them out." And so I said, "Okay, that's really great." So we got through my sidewalk, and then, you know, he left me and he helped me dig out the little path through the right-of-way to get down to the street, because I couldn't even figure out where that was. And he left me to shovel the, you know, my own steps, and, you know, we have sort of probably a 100-foot walkway to the backyard, and then we have to shovel back to the back, you know, garage, which I did, and I was happy to do that. And, you know, he went on to shovel out his car, and I kept feeling like this feeling of, like, should I help him shovel out his car? But I'm still shoveling. I don't know. What is the protocol for this? You know, What's the etiquette of snow shoveling? But, you know, I went inside and I spread my little fake rock salt that's safe for dogs and plants and everything. And then I really want to say, I think it was like the next day, maybe a couple days later, we got like 6 inches. And I told Rob about this, and I said, you know, this guy came and helped me shovel snow. And actually, I noticed it seemed like the next day we maybe got a little bit more, and somebody had shoveled our walk. And so I told Rob about this, and I said, you know, it seems like like, somebody shoveled our walk. Was that you? And he said, no, it wasn't me. And I explained to him about, you know, meeting the guy from down the street. And he said, you know, maybe he just feels sorry for you that you're married to some deadbeat who sends you out to shovel the snow. He said, you know, people notice these things and they talk. And I said, I don't know. And you know, so I went out and shoveled again. And then either later that same day or the next morning, there was even more snow. There was like 6 inches of snow that one night. And we wake up, and I hear a shovel scraping on the you know, sidewalk, and I'm like, well, it's got to be the guy next door, you know, because the guy next door, the guy on our right, is a pretty good shoveler. He's out there. He's maybe even a little bit more perfectionistic about it than I am. His walk is usually pretty perfect. And so I went out, and sure enough, the guy next door's walk was shoveled, and I had met him also while I was shoveling, and just, you know, said hello, and we introduced ourselves, and our walk was shoveled, and I couldn't tell who shoveled ours, but ours was shoveled, and next door is shoveled, and most of the houses are not shoveled, and so I really felt like, wow, you know, somebody shoveled our walk. I don't do that. Well, how come I don't do that? Maybe I should do that, you know? So, you know, fortunately I had another chance to shovel, because later that same day, I think we got like another, you know, couple inches. And so I kind of went out there and I said, well, you know, if you get it right away, it you know, it's easy. You just kind of push it along. So I shoveled like 4 houses down, and it's easy, you know, because it's like very light, it's fluffy, it hasn't had a chance to get packed down. And so I spent some time doing that and just feeling like, okay, you know what, I'm paying back my neighbors. I don't think it's what you know, Rob thinks, and I think that people are actually like help each other out and shovel each other's snow. And so I did that, and then, you know, I still had a little bit of energy, so I brought my attention to the people to our left who don't shovel at all. They have not shoveled at all, period, the entire time I've been there. And at first I thought, you know, maybe they go away for the winter. And then I realized, no, they're there. They leave through the back door, and they, you know, go to the garage, and they just drive out of there. So I thought to my, and I've been feeling kind of judgmental toward them, like, you know, the non-shovelers. And there's a couple of them. There's the people next to me just don't shovel at all. The people next to them shovel occasionally, and I noticed that somebody had shoveled, you know, that one. So they had shoveled, you know, 2 doors down. And so there's just, the whole street is looking pretty good at this point, except for this, you know, house to my left. And so I said, you know, who is it that we really are shoveling for? Because at first I was feeling like, you know, it's their obligation. They're supposed to do it. I read the rules when I moved, you know, and that should tell you everything you need to know right there about me. But I looked on the city website and I read the rules about how we're supposed to do this, and they're not following them. And so at first I was having these thoughts of judgment. And then I thought to myself, you know, who are we really shoveling for? I thought about, I have a friend who lost a leg actually a couple years ago, who I watched go from needing to get around in a wheelchair to, you know, having a temporary prosthesis and using a walker to, you know, now she has a permanent prosthesis and she has a cane and she gets around very well, except until all this snow and ice came around, and then I you know, had kind of watched her trying to get around, and it's really challenging. And I thought, you know, as I had thought before this, you know, how would you even get down the street? You know, she just kind of takes an Uber every place at this point, and just, you know, kind of hopes to make it into her own building or wherever she needs to go. And I thought how hard that is. And then I thought about, you know, my parents who are aging, and they still can get around fine, but it's a lot more challenging. And I would hate to see one of them slip and fall. And I thought about, you know, all the other people who maybe have a hard time getting around, the streets, and then I started thinking about, you know, we were on a school block, so there's a school, you know, two blocks to our left, and I thought about the kids going to school and, you know, trying to trudge through the, at 1.6 inches of snow that are packed there, and then I thought about me. You know, it's no fun for me either to try to trudge over this to get to the bus, and so I said, you know, why not just shovel them out? You know, who are we really shoveling for? We're really shoveling for the people who are walking, you know, and sometimes that's me. And, you know, and if it's not me right now, it's future me. So I shoveled them out. And, you know, I felt good about it. And there's more people, you know, kind of walking down the street. And, you know, one person was carrying a shovel and just heading, you know, kind of in a direction. And I'm not sure where they were coming from or going to, but they didn't look very happy. But, you know, I could just sort of say, hey, you know, how are you? Beautiful day, whatever. And so I felt like this experience kind of transformed me a little bit. At least for a little while, to this feeling of like, hey, why not? You know, what are we doing here? Why not just shovel the snow? And I had a feeling of, you know, we're all kind of shoveling together, and I still believe that people are helping each other out by shoveling for each other. And so it brought to mind Dogen's essay on the four integrative methods of bodhisattvas, which is maybe where you really thought I was headed with this in the first place. And the four integrative methods of bodhisattvas are giving, kind speech, beneficial action, and cooperation. And I thought about how my experience with the shoveling really, you know, kind of demonstrated all four of these in a different way, in different ways. So I kind of went back and I reread his essay from Shobo Genzo on the four integrative methods. I think we've called them sometimes the inconceivable methods of bodhisattva assistance. But some of what Dogen talks about with this is, you know, it starts with giving. And giving is, you know, actually one of the paramitas, dana paramita. It's the first of our 6 or 10 paramitas, which are sort of the transcendent practices of bodhisattvas, or they're called the sort of the 6 perfections. And we, you know, we studied bodhisattvas, the sort of the 6 major bodhisattvas in the Mahayana tradition in our spring practice period last year. And so we learned a little bit about, you know, different archetypes of bodhisattvas and ways in which, you know, each of them give, you know, in some way. You know, Avalokiteshvara maybe has the hands and eyes all over the body so that he or she can recognize, you know, what is needed and then offer it, and has many skillful ways of giving. But bodhisattvas aren't limited to just those 6. You know, they're in some ways all beings are bodhisattvas for each other, as we've talked about on different occasions. And in this instance, I think that because of receiving something, because, you know, up until the moment of someone, you know, kind of stepping out from in front of their house to help me shovel my walk a little bit, I had been just sort of like in this paradigm of, you know, that's the rule and here's how we do it and, you know, let's get it perfect and whatever. But because I received some help, it sort of woke me up and I just sort of went, whoa, you know, what's going on here? This is not what I was expecting. You know, how can I maybe do that too? So some of what Dogen writes in this essay is, I'm just going to read a little bit. Giving means not coveting. Not coveting is not being greedy. In worldly terms, it is said that not being greedy means not flattering, even if one should rule four continents. To provide education and civilization in the correct way is just a matter of not being covetous. For example, it is like the treasures one relinquishes being given to strangers. He goes on to say, there's a principle that even if it is not one's own thing, that does not hinder giving. It doesn't matter how insignificant the thing is. The principle is that the effort must be genuine. He talks about self gives to self, other gives to other. Giving is something that can sometimes break down the boundaries between self and other. We're just sort of, we hear this in our meal chant during Sesshin, where we talk about the emptiness of the three wheels, giver, receiver, and gift. That there's sort of a circle going around, and we're always at some point on the circle. Sometimes we're the giver, sometimes we're the receiver, sometimes we are part of the gift. So Dogen then says, therefore, one should give even a single phrase or a single verse of the teaching. It becomes a good seed in this life and other lives. One should give even a single coin or a single blade of grass of resources. It causes roots of goodness in this age and other ages to sprout. Teaching, too, is treasure. Material resources, too, are teaching. It must depend on the will and aspiration. I like this, you know, acknowledgement that that giving causes roots of goodness in this age and other ages to sprout. I think that we don't know, you know, what the results of our giving might be, and it might, as in the case of my neighbor with me, you know, we might turn someone's heart. You know, we might sort of wake someone up and say, okay, to where they're able to sort of say, you know, okay, I will participate. He says, in fact, there are cases where one person affected the well-being of another by giving his whiskers, and someone gained kingship after having presented sand to a Buddha. They didn't crave the thanks of others. They just did what they could. We can think about giving as a practice. We do it, and maybe we can let go of our idea of what the results should be, and just to practice it. So he says that when one learns giving well, being born and dying are both giving. All productive labor is fundamentally giving. Entrusting flowers to the wind, birds to the season, also must be meritorious acts of giving. Truly, it is because the virtues of giving are inherent in oneself that one has now attained oneself. The Buddha said, it may even be used oneself. How much more can one give it to one's parents, spouse, and children? He says, what is difficult to transform is the mind of living beings. For this reason, in the beginning of the six transcendent ways is the transcendent way of giving. One should not calculate the greatness or smallness of the mind, nor the greatness or smallness of the thing. Nevertheless, there is a time when the mind transforms things, and there is giving in which things transform the mind. So giving can be a very mysterious practice, and it can be a very ordinary practice. So it can transform us in ways that we don't expect. He then goes on to talk about kind speech, and kind speech means that in looking upon living beings, one should first arouse a mind of kindness and love and should utter caring, kind words. It is the absence of harsh speech. He says, those with virtue one should praise, those without virtue one should pity. So that's interesting. Pity is an interesting word, but you know, he's not saying that those without virtue we should, you know, criticize or disparage. And it made me think of, you know, how I had been sort of thinking about my neighbors on the left, the non-shovelers. You know, it kind of just made me sort of suspend my judgment. Once one has taken to kind speech, one will gradually increase kind speech. Therefore, hitherto unknown and unseen kind speech will appear. The conquering of enemies and the harmonization of rulers is based on kind speech. Kind speech is one of, well, I think right speech is part of the Eightfold Noble Path to ending suffering, as Gyoshin was talking about in her talk yesterday. And it depends on, right speech depends on right thought. And so I think that, and possibly right thought depends on right speech. I think, you know, when we start maybe a practice of saying things that are kind or things that are beneficial, I think what he's saying here is, once you've taken to kind speech, one will gradually increase kind speech. It becomes a habit, and those habits of speaking that way start to change our thoughts. If you've ever noticed, well, and our thoughts can be transformed by all kinds of things. If you've ever noticed your thoughts when your attitude maybe towards a person or a situation can really change based on the things that you're telling yourself about it. So if I tell myself that these, you know, people who don't shovel, they don't care, or, you know, whatever, they're jerks, that starts to transform my attitude towards them. And it's really something that I made up, right? You know, we don't know why this isn't happening or whether, you know, what the causes are. But we can adopt a habit of refraining from judging and using kind speech even in our thoughts. He says, you should know that kind speech comes from a kind heart, and a kind heart has goodwill as its seed. One should learn that kind speech has the power to turn the heavens. It is not just praising the able. So he goes on to say, beneficial action means to employ skills beneficial to living beings. For example, one watches over the road, far and near, working out means to benefit others. If this isn't a good example of that, I don't know what is. He says, one should pity even an exhausted turtle and take care of an ailing sparrow. When one has seen an exhausted turtle or an ailing sparrow, one doesn't want their thanks. One is simply moved to helpful action. This, I think, is I kind of think this relates to what I was starting to feel when I started to think about, you know, who do we shovel for? We shovel for those who need us to shovel. Fools think that when benefit to others is put first, one's own benefit will be reduced. It is not so. Beneficial action is one principle. It is universally benefiting self and others. I think that goes back to the circle of giver, receiver, and gift. It doesn't have to be, you know, we're benefiting someone else versus us. It can be, and I'll get into that in a minute. He says, so one should help equally those who are inimical and those who are friendly. It is to benefit self and others alike. If one acquires this heart, even in the plants and trees, wind and water, the principle of beneficial action being inherently non-regressive will indeed be beneficially acted out. One should wholeheartedly strive to rescue the ignorant. So I think this is something that we can practice. Practice beneficial action, not as putting others before ourselves, not as putting ourselves before others, but as a practice to change our own hearts and change our own thinking. As we change our own attitude, we change our thoughts and that can have, you know, rippling effects endlessly. I think it's also conducive to cooperation, which is the fourth of the beneficial integrative methods. He says cooperation, or I've heard cooperation described as together action, which I like too. I actually like it better for some reason. It's partly because it just sort of brings the idea of everyone doing things together. But in this translation, it says cooperation. Cooperation means non-opposition. It is not opposing oneself and not opposing others. It is like a human Buddha being the same as a human. Because of assimilation to the human world, we know a Buddha must assimilate to other worlds. When one knows cooperation, self and others are thusness. So when we're acting together, we're kind of really part of something. We're not so separate. We're in accord with a common cause. So Zisa also says, for example, a task of cooperation is a manner, is a standard, is an attitude. Regarding others as self, there must be a principle of assimilating oneself to others. Self and others are endless with time. So we can, I think, engage in many activities with this spirit. This is, you know, this kind of came up for me as, you know, my experience over a period of time of shoveling snow. But we can also stop this experience, you know, and what I have noticed with myself is that while I had this great, you know, kind of moment of like, wow, you know, shoveling snow, this can be a bodhisattva action, I think there's a way in which my mind latched on that. And what happened next was this feeling of, I think maybe it was even the next day, I was kind of pressed for time, and I had to shovel. I just went out and I shoveled my snow. I shoveled my walk, and that's it, and I'm gone. And I started to feel like, oh, you know, now I'm being selfish. You know, why am I not, you know, this giving bodhisattva? And then this feeling of like, oh, maybe I should be shoveling other people's walks. Or all this secondary thought, you know, can come into anything we do. And like in the Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, a hair's breadth deviation and you are out of tune. So I, you know, with these thoughts arising about what I should be doing, or, you know, I should be giving, or I'm being selfish if I'm just doing this, that's when we fall out of tune with what we're trying to practice. And it's not always, you know, it's not always something that we can readily regain, the same spirit. So I think what I'm suggesting is that's why it's important to find these opportunities to practice these qualities, because they don't always, you know, all sort of spring forth, you know, inspired in the moment. And so once we're out of tune, you know, we start reverting to our grasping mind and our judging mind and our mind that makes a distinction between self and others. And, you know, we start sort of parceling out how much we can give. And so, you know, by, I think, continuing to practice the spirit of giving, where was it that I was... Right. They didn't crave the thanks of others. They just did what they could. And the ways in which giving will transform the mind of living beings. Giving can transform our own minds if we continue to practice it. So we practice these perfections even when we don't totally feel it. You know, I had this moment of sort of totally feeling it, and that's wonderful. You know, but those moments pass, and then we're back to just sort of our you know, sort of mundane or prosaic practicing of things, and that's fine. I think we sometimes are, you know, able to sort of be in that moment, and at other times we're just sort of aware that moment is a possibility, but we're not in it right then and there. So. So it's not that it's not that one is good or one is bad. I think it's just not fully under our control. But I think it's worth, you know, in all of our activities, maybe thinking about times when we really are in tune with the activity and the spirit and the spirit in which we're doing that activity with all beings and giving, you know, what we can and contributing to the big circle of giving that is available to all of us. So that's all I'm going to say. Maybe there's opportunity for conversation. Other things that people maybe do that feel like an interesting practice this way, or an opportunity for practicing like a bodhisattva, or anything anybody wants to talk about at all. If you have your own shoveling stories. Yeah.
It's sort of like a semi-stranger thing, where it's like neighbors, where
yeah.
So it makes it a little different, I think. So in our place, we live in a 3-flat, and there's upstairs and downstairs neighbor. So for a long time, I was like the person who came out there and shoveled. You know, I was trying. It was all for generosity, you know, all good, you know. But then when a new neighbor moved upstairs.
Yeah, that's one of the traps.
I wanted to be the person who was the snow shoveler that helped everyone out. And so I sort of was like, oh, I can be the receiver on this one and just say thank you, you know? And it's just kind of an interesting, when little things like this really, like, highlight some of those tendencies that I have.
Yeah. Yeah,
I know there's lots of other things.
Yeah. It's an introduction to our stories. Because it is. I think people do help each other out, and we're not always so comfortable with that. Yeah.
Yeah,
we don't have many things in life that we're required to do in quite that way. You know, it's you can set up your routine to go to work, but if it snowed in the night, you got to get that shoveled. You know, so it throws everything, throws a whole new wrench in.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think that allowing someone to give you something is giving them something. Allowing someone to help you is helping them. So that's sometimes the harder.
For me too. I can be one of those people that has to be the one who's giving, and when I catch myself, you know, really getting into that, I start to sort of, you know, wonder.
Or even just wanting to be self-sufficient.
Yeah.
Not like, no, I don't need help with the dishes. Or like, no, I don't want to talk about this problem. I'll work through it on my own.
Yeah. Yeah, our egos get in the way of being part of the circle. Yes.
So I've built houses for many years. I haven't for the last couple of years to make my back. And shoveling people's sidewalks is a very valuable, beautiful, highly appreciated offering on any block that I'm involved in construction wise. I did it all the time. And then when I did my house, I did this on several houses actually, that I built for speculation. I would put snow melt on the sidewalks so that whenever it snowed, it would just melt right away.
Yeah.
You would never have to shovel. And I lived in a building for a while that I then tore out and replaced with my house. And I put the snow melt in there. And then I could no longer go out and shovel my neighbor's sidewalks. It seemed somehow inappropriate. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah, you're not one of the shovelers anymore.
I think it's both this embarrassment and indignity in the fact that I was never out there doing it anymore. And actually, about a year ago, the system failed. And so I did it again this past year, and I'm back in communion with the neighborhood. I had it repaired. It was scheduled to be repaired this spring, but God, it was more of a problem than anything. You know?
Yeah.
Crazy.
That's funny.
So having snow to shovel is itself somewhat of an opportunity to experience union on the street.
Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, to be too focused on patterns of behavior always results in problems of the mind. It's better just to do it.
Yeah, it's funny how our minds can contract and suddenly make up rules for, like, I have to do this. And
I've noticed people from Omaha don't shovel their sidewalks. I don't know what it is.
How do you know?
Just because over the years, I've had neighbors from Omaha, Nebraska, and what's the deal? It's a pattern.
That's totally transformed my experience of the people on the left. They're from Omaha.
Are they really?
No, I don't know. But I'm gonna tell myself that. That seems like one of those benign things you can tell yourself to explain something, you know? They're from Omaha.
But I made inquiry and the neighborhoods from which most people who transfer to Chicago are from are these huge. The sidewalks are hundreds and hundreds of feet long.
Yeah.
And they just don't have. Even though it's only 25 feet in Chicago, by 5 feet, that's all you got to do. They just don't translate. So maybe they're from Omaha. They just don't know any better.
I think the suburbs might be like that too, where it's just tons and tons of yardage between houses and.
But if you're saying it, I don't know. There's all kinds of things.
You also actually expose yourself to legal liability when you shovel your walk.
What?
But if you don't shovel your walk, then they have no basis for pursuing it. My dad and my sister are both lawyers.
Wow.
Not me, though.
That seems.
Get with insurance company.
Homeowners.
Your homeowners.
That does seem exceptionally devious.
It's specific duty to do it. They could sue you because you were supposed to.
You would think so. You would think so, but that's not true.
That's true in construction. Absolutely. If you do something, if you affected it, then they can have a claim against you. If you don't touch it, it's easier to get off the way.
If you don't touch it, the snow is an act of God, like under the law.
I'm trying to figure out how that can relate to bodhisattva practice. That's all right. Oh, yeah, right. Well, I'm sure that I will have many opportunities to have many thoughts and feelings about shoveling over the course of this mortgage.
In our neighborhood, the guy that bought the snowblower really sort of goofed up the whole community interaction.
Well, you know, that's a funny story because when we first moved here to Ancient Dragon, there was a lot of talk before we came to the Irving Park location about what is it going to mean that we're, you know, tenants and we're obliged to clear the sidewalks. And I remember after the first snow, because we moved in January, I remember Dawn and I came out to shovel the snow, and we came with our shovels, and we're good to go. And we're out there, and we're almost done with the front sidewalk. And suddenly, this guy comes by on like a John Deere four-wheeler with like a mini plow, and he just plows the whole block. And we're just like, okay, where did he come from? It turned out he was from the Chamber of Commerce, which is why we belong to the Chamber of Commerce. We wanted to support anyone who would, come by and shovel the walks, and we've never had to shovel since. Not because we belong to the Chamber of Commerce, because the Chamber of Commerce shovels the snow, whether you belong to them or not. So there's a bodhisattva action. Anyway, it's possibly all that can be said at this time.